for joining me tonight.
David, thank you, and to your listeners, I thank you, and I just wanted to say
to everyone out there that's listening, the first thing I'd like to even just say before we even get started is to we're at almost 190 murders so far this year.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, my prayers go out to the many people who lost their lives, their families, because, you know, this is something that affects everybody in all families. And let me tell you, this just tears a family apart. You never, never, never get over a missing a lost one or having somebody taken away from you. So from the bottom of my heart, from all the people that I know, and like I said,
and all the families that have been affected by it, our thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely. This is terrible. We're in a crisis right now, and we need to act like it's a crisis.
But that's a problem, because nobody's acting like it's a crisis. It's become the norm.
You know, David, I think what it is a lot of people don't know what to do. Our elected officials don't know what to do. And so they cling and they go to these old ways. You know, first thing they start talking about is guns, drugs, and gangs. Yeah, and that's enough. We've had enough of that. These are failed policies of the past, and we need some innovative new ideas. We also need to develop an insult level. Our elected officials need to stop arguing like little children, stop acting like little children. Our governor needs to get off his high horse, stop thinking he sits high and looks low, and come to Baltimore. You know, if I was a governor or not even just if I was a governor, if I was a mayor, I would make that governor come to Baltimore City. I would say, look, get two buses, get your elected officials, and let's ride around Baltimore City.
Let's take a look. Let's look at what's going on.
When Bernie Sanders, a presidential nominee, comes to Baltimore City and says this place looks worse than any war zone, than any place that he's seen overseas.
Beirut.
Then you know we got a problem. And all these elected officials, you are everywhere but where you're supposed to be, Baltimore City. And the mayor needs to stop, get off your knees, stop begging, and demand, absolutely demand that you come here. You know, I read in the paper where the Brandon Scott, who runs the judicial program, runs the judicial committee in Baltimore City, just this past week got into an argument. And you know what? I don't blame Brandon Scott. You know, he's got his finger on the pulse. And I understand the mayor and the police commissioner are upset because of some things that Brandon said.
Yeah, I think he walked out of a hearing that they were having, and he just got tired of hearing the same thing over and over again and no plan.
You know what? And we need to talk about that, especially about a plan and strategies. You know, first of all, Brandon, keep doing what you're doing. You know, and a lot of things are going to come out if you stay true to the people of Baltimore City. And this is not a come up for Brandon. This is not me patting Brandon on the back and endorsing him. But, you know, Sergeant Hobbs is going to call it as he see it. Now, there's a difference between a strategy and a plan. And the problem is, you know, we've been operating on strategies in the police department for years, for decades. Now, a policing plan is holistic in nature. It's holistic. And its approach is community policing. And a lot of people don't really truly understand what that basically means. I don't think our elected officials understand it because they say the words, but they don't know what they're doing. Now, when I talk about a holistic approach to policing, this is lotty-dotty and everybody. This is the department. This is the Department of Health. This is the juvenile justice. This is social service. This is the hospitals, the doctors. This is
health and mental hygiene.
Exactly. This is everybody that's included, public housing. Everybody has to put their ad hoc groups together and come up with a definitive plan that's inclusive. It can't be just a policing plan because let me say this, and for everybody that's listening, if you're expecting the Baltimore City Police Department to reduce crime, you're going to be waiting for decades like we're waiting now. For one simple reason, the police are not going to be able to reduce crime. That's not their function. People may say, well, it's not their function. You know, the Baltimore City Police Department is in the business of reducing crime.
Okay, but I do have to ask you, Sergeant. We're wondering right now, what is their purpose?
You know, I've been trying to figure that out for a while now, to be honest with you. And I'm a and I've been a police officer for 36, 37 years now. So let me say this. And there's a lot of people listening today. There's a lot of veterans out there listening. There's a lot of officers. There's a lot of police officers who are out there listening. There's a lot of elected officials listening. Now listen. You guys need to come together. We need to bring all the police together. We're in a state of crisis right now. People are dying. People are really dying. It's not enough just to count the numbers. This is serious business right now. If you ever held a young person in your arms and watched them pass away, I have. If you ever see people die, I have. And most good police officers are sick of it too. This is a problem of leadership. Plain and simple. Leadership and accountability and being innovative. We don't have those three things. This, you know, don't fall for the okey-doke. The okey-doke is guns, drugs, and gangs. Name-calling people. Calling people thugs. Calling people Baltimore Most Wanted. Calling people monsters. Making all these allegations, but not being able to come up with some real ideas in how to reduce crime. Well, first of all, it's like this. If you're going to reduce crime, this is a business of A. You know, I was talking to a business owner today, and he said, listen, you're going to talk about reducing crime. People need jobs. He said, I can provide jobs, but we don't get contracts from the city. They rather take those city contracts and give them to people out of state, their friends, but they don't give them to
wealthy
the people
developers.
Here. Wealthy developers. They don't give them here. You know, I looked at, you know, the mayor, and I read in the paper where, you know, she talked about the squeegee kids. Well, you know what? We were locking up squeegee kids about a year or so ago.
Under zero tolerance. The squeegee kids have been locked up, and most of them have records.
Exactly. This ain't about giving a few children jobs at the Baltimore City Police Department, saying, yeah, well, we gave these kids jobs. I want to see kids, you know, be mentored and have jobs where there are real jobs, where they have a future, like, you know, downtown businesses and, you know, these corporations and things of this nature. You know, when you talk about opening up rec centers, why you keep opening up these raggedy rec centers?
Yeah. Or why do you keep closing them?
Exactly. When less than a year, or about a year ago, if you remember, they opened up a beautiful, state-of-the-art recreation center over at Morrill Park in the white community. Now, that thing is second to none. Don't believe me? Go on the internet and look it up. Morrill Park Recreation Center. Look at the activities that they have for their children. They got academics, summer camps. They got they call them enrichment camps.
Enrichment camps, yes.
Yeah, they got gyms and concerts and they got movie nights. They got everything that you can possibly name to keep their children busy. And they have community meetings at this state-of-the-art. This place was built from the ground up with city money. I think they sold four garages in the city, I think for $40 million. Now, my question is where the rest of that money went to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if you also go and look at that at site, what you're also going to see is people like Garth Brooks, you know, and you'll see people like Cal Ripken. You'll see people going to these rec centers and encouraging children that look like them and taking their products and taking their monies and also giving those children an opportunity. So my call also is out to the Ravens, to the Orioles, all you African-American so-called riding around in your Lexus, your pretty cars and everything else. What have you done for the black community? Where have you been? You know, you're making these millions of dollars skinning and grinning. Where have you helped build a new recreation center for these children and put your face in the place, you know? So I'm looking. There's many aspects of policing, but the biggest key is this. You cannot have a policing plan and it doesn't include the entire community. It's just that simple. So when I read in the paper that, you know, listen, the commissioner's about ready to release his policing plan, well,
I mean, shouldn't he have done that years ago?
Well, they did. Remember, they spent a couple hundred thousand dollars a couple years ago on a policing plan from PERF. Now, for those who don't understand what PERF is a police executive research forum. Now, I'm going to tell you what that means. That is an organization that originally brought Frazier here. He was the president of that organization at one time. The Police Executive Research Forum basically is a bunch of mostly white. Now they have a few African Americans, I understand. But these are ex-commanders and different people, and they make money off of these cities.
They make money consulting. Let's
exactly.
Yeah, let's put it out there where the people really can understand it. And that's what they're doing.
Exactly. And that's what this is all about. This is just a money-making scheme again.
To fleece the people again.
And this PERF organization, they go from city to city, and they have some contacts with the Department of Justice. So when we file for all these grants and loans and everything, and they come back in, these grants and loans, these commissioners then hire PERF people. PERF people come in, and you know, they have their consultants, they have their teachers and their instructors, and then they leave.
They leave
a suitcase full of money.
Yeah, don't forget that part, please.
You know, but PERF, we need to look at PERF. We have enough experts in the city where we don't need PERF. We have enough experts in the city where we need a policing plan and strategies that are developed by us, for us, for the citizens of Baltimore. I'm tired of running and hearing about Los Angeles, California, and California, and New York, and Boston model. Well, we need a Baltimore City Police model, one that's going to fit the community here.
But, you know, what I'm finding, Sergeant, is that for the most part, they're meeting, they're going to these hearings, they're having community meetings and that kind of thing, but there's no plan. Where is the plan?
Well, to have a plan means that you have to have enough respect for the community and understand. The community also has to understand that they also have the authority and the power. You know, you can't have your council people just sitting back twiddling their thumbs. You've got to demand, and we have to have an insult level. We have to also understand, I don't think they believe that we're intelligent enough to understand exactly what's going on in this city. And like I always tell people, follow the money trail. Follow the money trail. Because we shouldn't be going down to Annapolis begging. And then, you know, and then the governor says, okay, well, I'll give you $2 million only for your police department. Well, we know that $2 million is going to be spent for overtime. So, I mean, what are you doing? You're actually doing nothing.
And that won't even put a dent in the overtime budget.
Exactly. And like the reason I explained Morrell Park and the Recreation Center was, this is where they have their community meetings. This is where their hub and their center is of power in that community, that white community. Now, if you go over to West Baltimore, Sandtown, Winchester, and you see where, you know, unfortunately the young man passed away, Freddie Gray, and you see the conditions over there. Where did they make their hub at? They rebuilt the police department.
Yeah.
And they said, well, listen, we put chairs in this room in here. Now we have a community room that you got that we can hold community meetings in here.
We're going to let you all utilize it.
Exactly.
But it's ours.
Right. Now the power is staying in the police department over there. You see? And the power should be with the community because they're the ones that dictate exactly what goes on in the community, how it goes on in the community, and how you're going to be policed in the community. Now, if Brandon, you hear this, and I know you don't have any ambitions to become mayor or anything, but if you hear this, just remember this. There are people who held your position before that brought out certain things that help us become a better city. Now, some of the things that people say, well, how do we get all these crooked police officers? How do we get all these things happen? Well, it's simple. When nobody's watching, there's no checks and balance, bad things are going to happen, you know? Now, remember when Martin O'Malley had that same position. Now, I'm not glorifying Martin. What I'm simply suggesting is that, you know, he held that same position, but he held people accountable. Him and Curtis Smoke got into it quite a few because Curtis Smoke felt like, you know, you mess with my police commissioner. But he said, no, I need to know what's going on. So he held hearings. And in those hearings, think about the things that come out. You don't have to believe me. Go over to City Hall and get a copy of what's called a Red Book. And that came out of testimony and evidence from Martin O'Malley when he held the same position that Brandon Scott. I just want to read just a couple of things that came out of hearing. One was, it says that the police department admitted that it has never sustained an equal employment opportunity complaint on the basis of racial discrimination. He couldn't even believe it. And he wrote it twice. He says, this fact warrants repeating. The department has never sustained an equal employment opportunity complaint on the basis of racial discrimination. Now, I think that any reasonable person has to realize, how do you never, ever, ever have so much racial discrimination in the city in the police department and never sustain one complaint? Also, what came out was, despite the proliferation of open-air drug markets in Baltimore City over the last 4 years and an increase in the size of the criminal intelligence unit, only one case of drug-related police corruption that originated from the department's IID has been successfully prosecuted. One case in 30-something years that I've been a police officer has been generated and prosecuted from the inside of the Baltimore City Police Department. One case. Now, think about all the cases recently. This has come from the feds. The feds have came in and done this. Are we?
Yeah. Well, I'll let you finish up your statement.
Okay.
Real quick, and then we're going to the break.
Right. Also, there was so much that came out. You know, the reading will let you know none of this stuff is new. None of things are new. We're just going through the same thing over and over again. They're just repelling the same garbage they gave to you years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so don't get fooled by this drugs, gangs, and, you know, bad guys with guns and trigger pullers and name calling. Do not get misled. Keep your eye on the prize. And the prize, plain and simple, is this. Demand and make sure they have a policing plan that's holistic in nature. How do you have a policing plan and the police don't even know about it? The rank and file don't know about it.
That means you don't have a plan. I got to take a break right now. Listen, if you're on the line, my lines are lit up. We'll get you on the other side of the break. 410-319-8888 is the number to call. I'm David Brown. This is Real Questions. We're going to pause. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Real Questions. I'm David Brown. Tonight we are dealing with issues surrounding the police department, and our lines are really lit up. 410-319-8888 is the number to call to try to get in and make your comment. But Sergeant, I was trying to allude to the fact that, you know, how do we stop the hemorrhage? I mean, you know, the murder rate is not going down. It's going up. I mean, and the shootings are still happening. What do we do? How do we stop the hemorrhage?
Well, the first thing is, I'd pull everybody in that dang, every elected official, every governor, everybody I possibly could, and need to understand, the first thing we have to do is get a meeting of the minds to let them know that we're in a critical situation. This is a crisis. You know, stop acting like this is new. You know, if you look this weekend, everybody's not there because they don't think it's a crisis. They just, oh, well, ho, humdrum, you got a few blacks that got killed again, and they're just going to keep killing themselves. Well, no, this is a real crisis. People need to feel safe in their homes. You know, I don't even feel safe. I'm a stakeholder. I live in the city. You know, I know a lot of people. We're experiencing crime like you wouldn't believe.
Unbelievable.
So the very first thing is there has to be an understanding that we're in a crisis. When you're in a crisis, you bring all your resources together. And that means that you don't attack the gun. The gun is not shooting somebody. Somebody's shooting a gun. I mean,
well,
you know.
That's what they're going to do tomorrow, aren't they?
Yeah, that's an exercise in fertility. That's just to fool the public. Look, we're doing something. We're going to say, look, we're going to give everybody 1 year, if you get caught for a gun. But my question is this. You know, black guns are not made in Baltimore City. You know, I worked drugs for a lot of years. I worked a lot of operations. I worked a lot of investigations. You know, we said this years and years ago. We said it through the people's plans. We said it through investigations and hearings at City Hall and City Council. We did all type of PowerPoint displays. We produced witnesses and documentation. And we said, listen, a lot of these guns are not, you know, they're originating from out in the counties. They're originating from out of state. They're originating from, like, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Harford County, all these Anne Arundel, all these different places. And what it boils down to is you have a lot of white young people that bring these guns into Baltimore City, and they trade them off for drugs, and they trade them off, and they've been doing it for years. Now, what's going to happen when they start getting caught and you try to apply a 1 year? First of all, I don't think it's going to work because it's got to meet, you know, a certain mustard. It's got to meet a certain standard through the law. And, you know, you got too many lobbying groups, and the state's not going to go for all that, you know, with the guns and things of this nature. So the answer to your real question is we got to start treating this like a very serious incident. This is very serious, and we need to bring everybody together. There's a lot of solutions that can be done, you know, but, you know, these old solutions are not going to work. We're just biding time and trying to fool the public that we're doing something, and we're really not doing nothing.
410-319-8888 is the number to call. Let's go to Officer Claude. You're on the air.
You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, how you doing, Sergeant Hobson?
How you doing, Officer Claude? How you doing, sir?
All right, buddy. And this is the problem. And right now, I'm in the southeast. They're getting their butts handed to them with carjackings, armed robberies, you name it, shootings. This week alone, they've been busy. There's been 3 murders. Also, the police. We got a drug problem in a certain location. We're watching cars going in and out, people dealing in and out. Nobody can call us back. Nobody's going to meet with us. You know, you can't get no results. You call down to the major, you can't get him. You can't get the sergeant. You can't get a captain. You can't get you know what I mean? It's terrible.
So what we Sergeant, need to do, let me ask you this. What do you do, officer, to come up with a policing plan, and what type of plan should we have in order to make things work?
Well, the only thing that's going to work is to get out on these streets here and start combating crime. I mean, but the problem is these police feel that they don't want to do it anymore. I've seen a lot of police act like it's just a job now, and they don't want to do nothing unless they have to. But we need to get out here and walk these beats here, get these thugs off these corners, you know, the ones that are causing trouble, and lock them up. But the problem is you can't keep them in jail. You know what I mean? The repeat offenders come right back at it again. And you know, everybody says it is a crisis. Sergeant Hobson's right. There's got to be a better plan. The commissioner's doing nothing. It's a dog and pony show.
You know, I agree with Claude, and I'm gonna tell you something. That Claude is a veteran. You can tell he's a veteran. You can tell that you know he cares about the city. He cares about people like that. And there are a lot of people. There are a lot of great police officers out here. So when you hear me a lot of times talk about police, it ain't. Listen, there are some bad police, but there are some really great police, and
well,
I can tell.
This. Yeah. And Sarge, the one police that I grew up with was like my mentor when I was a young police explorer. His name was Joe Kundra. I worked in the Central District. He just lost his son in that Marine crash over in Mississippi. He's a retired Baltimore City.
Jimmy Kundra, wow.
And it's sad. I mean, you know, they lost their life. But people are losing their lives. And, you know, people are saying it's a black thing, blacks killing blacks. It's a terrible thing. It's not about blacks. And that's what people don't realize. You know, it's not racist because a white guy will kill you just as quick.
And you see, I think that has also been the problem. We have too many people dividing us and not bringing us
you're
together.
Right.
You know,
you're right. Divided we stand, and divided we—I mean, united we stand, and divided we fall.
Thank you, officer.
You know, we got to do something, pal.
We definitely do.
I think Claude brings up a lot of good points. And some of the points is you can hear the frustration. These are veteran officers that have to go out there each and every day to put their lives on the line. You know, a lot of their wives and kids and loved ones, they love their husbands and wives just like everybody else do. But I think you're getting the feeling out here that, and from all the officers I talk to say the same thing. They feel like there's no support from the command. They feel like the command has let them down. And
why?
I think they let them down because of several things. I think our command staff is really not a command staff. And let me say this to you. We have a lot of intelligent people in this city. We have a vacuum in our upper command staff. We've allowed too many people to bring in their friends, to bring in people that really don't know anything about Baltimore. They wouldn't know how to get from one end of North Avenue to the other end of North Avenue unless they have a driver. And they bring them here. They put them in charge. And they're not going to get the respect of the rank and file because they don't know anything. And I think you have too many of these people in command positions that really are immature in a lot of different ways. Now, there's ways that you can handle that. You know, you can bring back a bunch of commanders who's got experience, you know, and say, listen, you care about the city like we care about the city. Why don't we create a board up here? And we could mentor a lot of our commanders out there that's running these districts that don't really have a clue to what they're doing. And you just heard an officer say, hey, I've made phone calls. I can't get in touch with my sergeant. I can't get in touch with my lieutenant.
He doesn't even get a response.
I can't even get a response. So now that officer has to make a decision. And then that officer is going to be Monday morning quarterback and possibly say, you know what, if I make the wrong decision, my job is gone and I could go to jail.
Yeah.
So I think you got neglect from the top. Like they always said, the fish rots from the head down. You know.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Good evening, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm on the air?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I've been listening, and I've been in Baltimore 17 years. I'm not originally from Baltimore. But the first year I got here, I realized the city was in a crisis. So when you say the city is in a crisis, to me, the city has always been in a crisis for at least 17 years I've been living here. Murder rate has always been over 200 or more. Baltimore, the 17 years I've been living in this city, I've never seen the murder rate at least 100 or less. So to me, the city has always been in a crisis. It ain't up to the police to come save me. It's not up to the governor to come save the troubled communities in Baltimore. It's up to the people to want to make a change. If I ride down certain parts in certain communities in off North Avenue anywhere in Baltimore, and I see people just sitting in the trash, but they don't come out and pick the trash up. Would I supposed to wait for the police to come pick the trash up for me or make sure the kids are protected or the women? Yes, police play a part in enforcing and getting certain elements either out of the community, but I think a lot of it got to do with the spirit of especially African-American people and, as he alluded, other races of people. But it's up to the people of Baltimore to want to make a change. And I wish 92.2, 95.9, I wish they would promote the ceasefire instead of playing mama music all day, which doesn't enlighten the young youth's minds. Even down to the radio is not really. Besides, I love this station, but a lot of commercial radio stations are, to me, a part of the problem. But I'm not saying it's a lost hope for Baltimore, but Baltimore has always been in a crisis. And you got to wonder. Like, I'm from Florida. They got the law is 10/20/25. Catch the gun is not your name, that's 10. Shoot the gun, kill somebody, it's laws in place. But from what I'm hearing here, Baltimore has a light gun law. Why is that so that you have a light gun law, but you got a high homicide rate? So you got to ask the question, who really cares?
You don't.
I'm just saying, it's got to be up to the people to care. Nobody going to come down and save a plighted community or invest in, unless they just plan on running millennials into it. But as far as the people, you got to care about your community before anybody else can come save you. You got to save yourself. And that's pretty much all I got to say.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly with you. But I also understand this. Don't let deflection. And a lot of times we get deflected or we get taken off our plan, off our what. Oh, what you call? Yes, what you say is very true.
They change the discussion.
Exactly. What you say is very, very true. Now, if you look at when you say what good is a policing plan, a good or strategy, let me show you a policing strategy in Baltimore City. Now, this information, you know, came out through our policing plan, the people's plan, and stuff like this, things that we were able to glean, and also information from several city council members, a city council member. There are more liquor stores in Baltimore City than 26 states combined. Are you hearing what I'm saying? There are more liquor stores in Baltimore City than in 26 states combined. They also showed that with the crime maps and everything, that a lot of crimes happen in or near a lot of these liquor stores. Now, the reason I'm saying this is this. We have a lot of people outside the community come in here and buy a lot of these liquor stores or buy stores. And what they do is, you know, we don't challenge them. The community has to get out and challenge and say, okay, what kind of liquor license do you have? Now, there's several different types of liquor license. One is a regular liquor license that you see where people, it's like a carry out and things of this nature, people go in. But there's also, and a lot of you who are old enough to remember, there were taverns in Baltimore City.
Oh, yeah.
And that's called a tavern license. Now, that license means that there's a place where you go in, you buy your liquor, you can consume your liquor there. You know, you can get something to eat. You also can sit down and do whatever you need to do. And they have trash receptacles and things of this nature. Well, a lot of people came in. They've ignored the tavern license. And they just made it, they closed up the tavern part, and they made it a simple carryout. Now, where does that person or that patron go to drink their or consume their alcoholic beverage? Where they go to when they get some food? Where they go when they finish using it? They normally go where? They go right on the steps and drink their beverage. They'll throw it. There's no trash receptacles anyplace, so they'll throw it where? On the ground. Where they go to relieve themselves? In an alley. You see, we have to do better. You have to have a place where people can consume. If you're going to sell it, then you have to hold these people accountable. If you have a tavern license, then you have to have a tavern. We need to close up some of these liquor stores, number one. You know, there's so many different ways to reduce crime that a lot of people don't realize and understand. It's sort of like the juveniles. Now, I've worked in juvenile bookings for years. I speak to those juveniles. Now, one of the biggest things that I saw, I talked to all of them. And I've asked every last one of them come in there. And I can count on one hand how many times that a father has came down to pick up their child and still have fingers left over. Now, I'm not saying that all fathers are bad, because I know some great fathers out here. But what I am saying is we got to get a hold of our children. And when I ask them the question, you know, when's the last time you seen your father? The answer is, I don't know him. He's not in my life. And you have too many women trying to raise young men. Now, I hope this doesn't sound bad, but I don't believe that a woman can raise a young man, nor can a man raise a young woman. It's inconceivable to me that that can happen. Now, there are those exceptions. There's, you know, a lot of people have I had a great mom. She did this. There's a balance that a young man need in his life. All young men need a father. I guarantee you they wouldn't be doing half the stuff out here if some of these men put a hand on them.
Yes, stepped up to the plate.
Now, we also have to look at the types of crimes that's being committed out here by a lot of these young people. I wrote reports after report after report to commanders, to the mayor, and I explained to them, hey, you know, where we're going. The target age years ago when I first went to juvenile booking was 15, 16. Now it's down to about 11 and 12 years of age that these young people out here committing crimes. And you know, I'll say this real quick. You know, and I hear people always denigrating young people. I hear them on the television, I hear them on the radio. And, you know, you just have nothing else to say as far as I'm concerned. I know so many young, beautiful young people because I see them each and every day. And they're doing all the right things. But some of our young people out here are so mistreated. so abused. You know, if you want to go and see children, go under 83 and look at how many homeless young people out there. They don't have anything to eat, don't have no place to sleep. You know, I mean, it's not their fault. Now, yes, you call them all kind of names. You call them thugs. You call them trigger pullers. You call them bad guys with guns. You call them every name in the book. And you call them monsters. Well, let me say this. They may be monsters. Yes, they may be monsters. But you know what? You created those monsters. Hmm. And just like the Frankenstein theory always says, one day you're going to have to meet that monster. And the day we have met that monster that we created, we don't like it. And until we do something about it, we're going to see a lot more.
410-319-8888 is the number to call. Let's go right back to the phones. Good evening, caller. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening, David. Good evening, Lou. This is Dr. Kwame Adeyemi, former city councilman.
Doctor, formerly known as Dr. Handy, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Wanted people to be able to really identify with you.
One of the people that we consulted with when we did the People's Plan, that helped us bring in information about the liquor stores. And
sure.
I was thinking about the very point you made, Sergeant Hobson, regarding that whole issue of the liquor stores. But in terms of what I was calling to respond to, first of all, David, you as usual, an excellent show, outstanding.
Thank you.
The matter that you were mentioning, Sergeant Hobson, may I elaborate just a tad?
Absolutely.
On the report that highlighted those couple of lines you read was actually the EEOC report, I believe. And that report, conducted by a young lady who was a member of my congregation at the time, generally stated that Baltimore City had the second worst police department in the United States. Only Los Angeles had been evaluated.
You may have been right the first time.
That's right. Only Los Angeles had been evaluated to be worse. Baltimore was number two. That includes Chicago, New York. Baltimore was the number two worst police department as evaluated by the EEOC. There were a number of manifestations of that. The racism exhibited by the police department against its own officers, the brutality and misconduct committed by officers by the department against the citizens. These were some of the most egregious. And again, the ranking was number two out of the country. So Martin O'Malley was the head of the legislative investigation, and it was his momentum that triggered the EEOC report. However, I would like to add an addendum that when that report was written and concluded and published, not one mayor since then has acted on any of the recommendations or requests made by that report. Mayor O'Malley didn't do it, his successor, and not one mayor since then has enacted any of the the recommendations made by the EEOC report. And this was in 1999. So what we're looking at is the same problem. The police department is in whatever condition it's in because, again, it continues to be one of the worst led, conducted, operated police departments in the country. But let me jump shift on that issue and just mention this thing about black on black crime. If we aren't historic in our reasoning, we can make some immature judgments that literally are what we see happening. In other words, all of these strategies and plans that have been in place have affected little, if anything, in the terms of reduction of crime. And that's because people aren't looking at the history. The FBI was created not for black people's violence. but for Italians and Poles and a lot of other ethnic groups. They were the mass criminals. They were bank robbers, murderers. The crime wave in the 20s and 30s was off the chain, and it wasn't being conducted by black people. It was being conducted by Italians. It was being conducted by those people who were primarily in poverty, as those ethnic groups moved out of poverty. And one of the things we have to realize, the name Paddy Wagon comes from, I believe, the nickname Paddy Wagon was given because of the need by the police departments to have larger vehicles to handle the number of Irish people who were arrested weekly and weekend, every weekend. This was how the police van became known as the Paddy Wagon. So, in other words, what I'm suggesting is crime is commensurate, and its first cousin or its other face is poverty. Wherever you find poverty, you find crime. And it's not peculiar to African-American people. It's been historic for every ethnic group in this country or any country. Where poverty is extant, crime is, again, the other face of poverty.
You know, so, Councilman, you're correct about the poverty. It's poverty in housing. And
let me just finish this point. Until we address that, we can't address crime. As you notice, the other ethnic groups who were the personification of crime, they moved up the economic ladder out of poverty en masse, I mean, as a group.
Doctor, I think we lost the count.
You lose him?
Yeah, sounds like it.
You know,
if you call back, Councilman, I need you to leave your number too, because I'd like to have you on as a guest from time to time.
You know, he has some great points, and but our history here. That's why I keep saying we keep going back and doing the same thing over and over and over again. And the reason why I was saying that you know, the mayor is on a learning curve as far as I'm concerned. You know, she has to learn how the police department really operates. And I think the leadership of the police department is taking advantage of her because they know that she doesn't know. So in many ways, you know, she's talking about developing a policing plan. That's not a policing plan. A policing plan, like I said, is with the community. It explains it. It addresses all these issues about poverty and housing. And that's why you have to have so many people that come together. And it takes a while. It took us almost a year to put together the people's plan. And we talked to everybody, Lottie Dottie and everybody. I traveled the entire United States and spoke to every police commissioner, everybody that you can possibly think of, looked at every policing plan that they had. And every successful police department in this country will tell you, whether they call it community policing, whether they call it holistic approaching, you cannot have a plan that does not include the community. The community is our boss. We work for them. They don't work for us. We work for them. But we have a paternalistic attitude when it comes to dealing with the public.
And it's the same way. It's the same way, Sergeant, with elected officials. I mean, the elected officials work for the people.
Exactly.
But they don't act that way.
You know, I know there's some elected officials listening now. And let me tell you something. I looked at the numbers. And the numbers say that, you know, a lot of you guys didn't win by a whole lot. I think it's like 8 to 10,000 or something like that votes that it take. The community asks, what can you do? First thing you need to do is get on the phone and call your elected officials and let them know your dissatisfaction with the crime and that you demand and expect better. That's the first thing you need to start doing. And the second thing is, you know what? You have voters in your districts. Get a collection of those names. Go down and see them. You know, I used to go and see. I saw the commissioner. I saw the mayor. I saw the governor. You know, I pulled no punches, and I told them the truth. I didn't go down there angry and screaming and jumping up and hooping and hollering, but I let them know that, hey, we have a problem here. I went and seen the governor. I've even met with the president of the United States when we were dealing with Prince George County Police Department. So you've got to stop being afraid. Your children and your families are worth it.
But, you know, the people are worried about retaliation. I mean, the police department has really become retaliatory in these kinds of efforts.
Well, no one knows that better than I do. I mean, listen, I got fired 3 times. But you know what? And I got rehired 4 times. I've never lost a hearing. I've never lost a court case. I've won a ton of money. But, you know, none of that means nothing. And I made some changes that they, you know, it's sort of like watching Trump erase a lot of things that Obama did, you know, and he just erased them just because he wants to erase them so they can go back to doing what they used to do. We need to be on guard and hold people accountable. The Sun papers need to be held accountable. You know, you can put a board, a group together, go down there and meet with their board and say, hey, we want some better reporting. That's why you're losing all your subscribers and different people. No, people need to be held accountable. You can't just scream at the TV and the radio. You got to pick that phone up. You got to call the governor. You got to demand that. Why should the mayor of this city be given a report card to the governor? The governor should come down here and see for himself. You know, if other people from out of state can come here and walk our streets and say this is worse than Beirut, but you can't see it, you can't see it because you don't want to see it.
Sergeant, we're out of time. I've got to bring you back in. I'd like to bring in some other people. We should do like a round table with the so-called key players. And if we have to develop a strategy on air, we'll develop a strategy on air.
Oh, yeah. You know a great round table?
Yeah.
That would be great. Then you'll see them for what they are.
Sergeant, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with me today. I apologize for getting stuck on 695, folks. Thank you so much. Now I know the true meaning of Sunday driving. Special thanks to Ty. He does a fantastic job week in and week out.
Yes, he does.
I'm David Brown. See you again next week. Good night, everyone.